So we are in a time of year, the season of Pentecost, when we hear about Jesus' teaching and the things Jesus did and his miracles, really the heart and substance of Jesus' ministry. And every year it strikes me, what a shame that we get this in the summer when everybody's, well, gone. But it is what it is. Now, part of what happens when we hear stories like this is sometimes we are tempted to focus on the details so that we miss the point, particularly when it comes to matters of healing, miraculous healing. Now, for now, it's enough to know that that kind of thing was far more common in those days than it is today, particularly in a time when people did not understand disease the way we do. Because for them, sickness and disease always brought fear and uncertainty. If you were sick, it meant loss of income. It usually led to a death and brought all kinds of fear about what was going to happen to your dependents. So in those times, healing was not just the absence of disease. Healing also meant getting your life back. It meant freedom from fear, uncertainty, and an early death sentence. But the point of this story is bigger than just one healing. It is about the miracle of faith and trust and what happens when we expect miracles and when we accept miracles. So there's a couple things in the story I want to highlight. First, we're told that this man who talked to Jesus was a Roman centurion. Get that? A Roman centurion. He was an officer in the occupying army that occupied Judah. Now, fortunately, none of us probably have lived under an occupying foreign power. But what we do know is soldiers of an occupying foreign power are rarely kind to the people they occupy. They bully them. They take everything they can. They really don't care about them. They are regarded as a nuisance and as backward. And the soldiers, they are just there to do a job. And mostly, they can't wait to get home. They hate it. They hate being with you. But this one, we're told, was different. The people said he was kind to them. The people said he loved them. He even helped them build a new synagogue. So they said, because of that, he was worthy of Jesus giving him attention. But he wasn't Jewish. Now remember, Jesus was Jewish. He was a Messiah for the Jews. He came for the Jewish people. This man wasn't Jewish. So by rights, he had no right to ask Jesus for a thing. But we're told Jesus was surprised at him. Jesus was surprised at him because this man showed a level of trust and faith in Jesus that sometimes Jesus' own followers didn't show. It would have been so easy for Jesus to say, go away. You're not one of my people. You don't deserve my mercy. But mercy is not about deserving. Mercy is about needing it. And unlike the spirit of deep entitlement that's common among some folks, this man, the Roman centurion, he had no sense of entitlement at all. In fact, he was the opposite. He didn't appeal to his good deeds. He said, I don't deserve a thing. But he trusted Jesus. Second thing is, even though we're told the people said that he was such a good man and therefore worthy of Jesus' help, he himself said he wasn't worthy, right? And because he felt he wasn't worthy, he told Jesus, look, don't trouble yourself. Don't bother going to my house. Just say the word. Stay here. Just say the word and my servant will be healed. Now we might lose a point here, so we need to be careful. Jesus did not heal the man's servant because the man was so kind to the Jewish people. Jesus healed the man's servant because this outsider, this Gentile, trusted Jesus. And that was enough. So Jesus healed the man from a distance. And then we're told, reports came back from home that the servant was healed. Now I got to tell you, a pastor friend of mine, we're talking about this week because it's what pastors do because, well, we don't have much of a life, so we're talking about the story, and we were wondering, what was it like back home? Just imagine all these people hanging around with this servant who is so sick, he's almost dying. And all of a sudden, what? Bam! He's healthy again? What are they thinking? But that part didn't make our story, so we can't go there. This story can lead us to a couple questions, though. First one is, do we expect miracles? And second, do we accept them when they happen? You know, in our modern scientific world, it is easy to become skeptical about miracles, to write them off and explain them away, how they could have happened. We've all heard it. Oh, he wasn't really sick. It was a coma. It was a bad case of the flu, meningitis, who knows, maybe some psychological disorder. But you know what? For them, whatever it was, it didn't matter. What mattered is they were terrified and they needed healing. Sometimes we will assume that miracles are necessarily rare, or they have to be inexplicable events that break the laws of nature and physics, things that make everybody's jaws drop. But what if miracles were common? What if, when miracles happened, they didn't get noticed because they don't break the laws of nature? What if miracles include things like turning hard hearts of stone into hearts of love and compassion? What if miracles were about people like the centurion, who lived by compassion and mercy instead of force and threats? In a time when the medical community today serves to bring about a lot of the physical healing around us, I think we could use miracles in other areas. Miracles that are about changing hearts and minds. Miracles that lead us to seek unity in the midst of a world that wants to divide us. Miracles that heal hard hearts and defeat racism and hate and judgmentalism and me first and what can I get and my rights over your rights and so on. Maybe it's just me, but I think those kinds of miracles are mighty important. Just turn on the TV, and I think we can see how very much we need miracles of that kind today. The question for us is whether we expect them. The centurion in our story, he expected that Jesus could heal his servant from a distance. What do we expect? Have we given up expecting that God's going to be at work? While it is easy to assume that miracles need to be huge, extraordinary events, it is also easy to assume that God is the only one who makes miracles happen. And that if we want a miracle, our role is to ask. See, we pray, and then we wait, and we watch for God to deliver. But God doesn't work alone. Jesus performed some miracles, not a lot, but since then, he calls us to make miracles happen. Now, we may not heal people from a distance, unless you count sending quilts to places like a hospital in Tanzania. Unless you count outfitting a hospital in Tanzania a number of years ago with all the medical supplies to bring them out of the Civil War era hospital into a modern hospital. A place that gave us this in gratitude. That's healing at a distance, I think. Or maybe it's sending food to places like El Salvador, Haiti, 16th and Fond du Lac. We may not heal people from a distance unless you consider words you say on a phone through one of these. And it turns out you have just the right words for somebody who feels like their world has fallen completely apart. You see how this works. Miracles happen. Healing happens at a distance. Miracles keep coming. I had the privilege a couple weeks ago to speak at the retirement of a good friend and colleague, Pastor Bob Ullman from Redeemer United Church of Christ. And in the United Church of Christ, the UCC, their motto, their slogan is, God is still speaking. I'd love to steal it, but it's copyrighted. God is still speaking. Yeah. God is still at work. God is still acting. Healing happens still. Miracles happen still, sometimes close up, sometimes at a distance. Miracles are not always what we expect. They don't always happen the way we assume they will, but that's okay. But they do have a couple things in common. Trust and mercy. No level of deserving anything. No special treatment for those who try to be more faithful to God or those who try to be more religious than others. In fact, miracles happen most often among those whom we would least expect. The people who have nothing and can only beg for mercy. Or people like, I don't know, a Roman soldier. So let me ask you to imagine what it must be like for God to be at work in the world and in us in ways that are so common and so ordinary that we don't even notice it. And then we say to God, how come you're not doing anything? Reminds me of parents with four-year-olds, and the four-year-old has a fit because the parents don't do anything for him. Really? If you haven't had that experience, have one sometime. You'll go there. God continues to make amazing things happen. We just don't always see it. God is at work in the world. Open your eyes. See the amazing thing that God is doing. Not just things like a tree packed inside an acorn. When was the last time you did one of those, huh? But maybe even harder. Leading hearts that have been hurt, broken, maybe even persecuted, opening them to love and forgive. See, the harder thing for us is to accept miracles, to accept them when they happen for us, and to accept the ways that God continues to work in this world and through us, not because we deserve it or because we are good enough, but because God is merciful. Expect miracles. Accept miracles. Make them happen.